Coming up on Golf Today, the newest PGA Tour winner, Scottie Scheffler, joins the show to talk about the wild week in Phoenix, playoff pressure, and whether or not the craziness at TPC Scottsdale should be replicated elsewhere. And Riviera going all Bo Derek on us. Every member of the top 10 in the field at the Genesis Invitational. Which one of these players deserves a 10 for a season so far? And speaking of 10, the 10th hole at Riviera, beautiful and beguiling, but is it the best short par 4 in the game? Hang 10, 10-4, 10 points to Gryffindor. It's Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Ben Hogan once said of Riviera, I shall always remember it, not only for the quality of the course, but for the whole club and the members. Well, the centerpiece remains the 18 holes of golf designed by George C. Thomas that opened in 1927, site of the Genesis Invitational hosted by Tiger Woods. Welcome inside our studio, Damon Hack, alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week Magazine. We have Paige McKenzie joining us in just a little bit. If last week was a party in Phoenix, what does this week mean for the PGA Tour?
Well, last week was a party, but you better hope there's no hangover if you're in the field at Riviera, because we're down to brass tacks business now. Almost everyone who's anyone in the world of golf is in the field this week, and they're all looking for that kind of close-up moment in Hollywood. So these guys better have scraped off the dust from what happened in Phoenix.
Tell you what, man, Riviera is old school. To me, this is kind of golf from the roaring 20s. And you think about Humphrey Bogart with a flask of a libation of some sort leaning against the tree at 12. You think about the modern day members like Larry David or World Golf Hall of Famer like Amy Alka, and the quality of the golf course and the quality of winners in the past like Fred Couples and Lanny Watkins, Ben Hogan, Steve Elkington, Phil Mickelson. It's just been a place where the greats have wanted to get the job done.
It really is, and it's interesting now that this is Tiger's event, and Tiger is now so synonymous with maybe the only course he didn't actually win at.
Yeah.
I mean, he made his debut here as a teenage amateur 30 years ago, but he's never actually had any success here, but now it's the host, obviously a hometown event for Tiger, and it's really his showcase this week. And I think we're looking forward to hearing more from him this week in the role of host, as we are from the guys who are actually in between the ropes.
Yeah, and Tiger's supposed to address the media tomorrow. All right, Paige McKenzie, your thoughts. I was with you last week in Scottsdale. If last week was a big shindig, what is this week in L.A.?
I loved your descriptions, and to me, it feels like a little bit of a walk of fame, right? It ties in the history of this game and how many great champions this golf course has produced, but also you have the biggest stars in the world there this week. So it feels some sort of showcase of both past and present in the game of golf.
I love that. It is a showcase. 10 out of the top 10 players, everybody in the field this week. It is a remarkable, in fact, the first time ever for the Genesis that all 10 members of the top 10, I'm talking John Rahm, the world number one. He's played here three times, by the way. His best finish, a tie for fifth. We got the L.A. native Colin Morikawa, who went to UC Berkeley. Patrick Cantlay, the UCLA alum. Hovland, Rory, DJ, Xander, JT. Last week's winner in Scottie Scheffler and the Masters champ, Hideki Matsuyama. So I guess the question so far this season, who gets a 10 for their performance in this young year?
I think there's a few viable candidates so far, but I'm going to go with the guy who's number four on that list we just looked at there, Victor Hovland, the happy hitman, who's going around with a smile on his face, never leaves his face all the time, but he leaves with a lot of trophies these days. He won in Mayakoba at the end of last year. He won the Hero World Challenge just before Christmas. He won in Dubai a couple of weeks ago. He missed the cut last week, actually, in Phoenix. That was the first time in 22 starts on the PGA Tour that he'd missed a cut, going all the way back to the Players. So that was something of an anomaly for Hovland. But he is just so solid in the game right now. He puts himself in the mix consistently well, and he's the only guy out there with three wins so far in this season around the world. So to me, he's the guy who's closest to the 10 out of 10 perfection.
Yeah, three wins in his last six starts. As you mentioned, he's someone who's 19th in strokes gained off the tee, 219th in strokes gained around the green. So he's someone who's finding a way to win, even with, by his own admission, a glaring weakness that he's tried to improve.
Yeah, it wasn't his famous line, you know, my chipping sucks. But, you know, if you hit as many greens as Victor Hovland does, you don't actually have to chip that much. You know, Jack was never known for having a great short game either, because Jack didn't need a great short game. It will eventually catch up with Hovland. He has made some progress this year. If you look at individual tournaments, he tends to outplay the season stats with some regularity. But that's definitely the weakness that he has. All of these guys are working on something. That's clearly the thing that Hovland is working on at this point.
Those ball striking is superior. How about Paige McKenzie? Your thoughts? Your chipping, by the way, does not suck. I've played golf with you. Your thoughts on how Victor Hovland is doing what he does?
I think it's been impressive to see his continued growth since he's turned pro. You can see the growth in confidence as well as the results that have followed. So I think Victor Hovland is a great choice for somebody that does deserve a 10 so far this season. My choice, however, is the 10th on that list, and that's Hideki Matsuyama. It's hard to ignore the player that's leading the FedEx Cup with 2 wins so far this season. And I think when you look at Hideki, you have to look at the high watermark that he set in 2016 and 17. That fall to spring swing on those results, he had 4 worldwide wins and 2 runner-ups in 6 starts. He's not quite picking up wins at that pace. He's got 2 wins in his last 5 starts. Add in an 8th place finish and a 13th place finish. That keeps my interest in what Hideki can do next. The other thing that I find interesting, and when you talk about weaknesses and what players are working on, and that's Hideki's putting. And what we've seen so far is a little bit of a tale of 2 parts of the season. In the first 3 events on the PGA Tour this year, he was total minus 13.2 strokes gained putting. In the last 3 events that he's played, inclusive of that is Sony, where he was leading the field in putting, he has been plus 8.4 strokes gained putting. And we know what a tremendous ball striker Hideki is. That has been a very consistent part of his game throughout his career. If he seems to be trending, as I pointed out, with his putter, then I'm anxious to see what he can continue to do the rest of this season.
Yeah, when Hideki putts well, he wins. Eamon, my question would be, is Hideki underrated a little bit in your mind, considering what he's accomplished? You win a green jacket, and then you double down and win the Zozo in your native Japan, and you win the Sony as well.
He might be underrated here, but that speaks more to the kind of American or European-centric nature of golf and maybe the language and cultural barriers. I don't think he's remotely underrated in Japan if you see the complete phalanx and army of media that follows him everywhere he goes. I think he definitely might be the most or the least talked about Masters winner we've seen in recent years. He keeps a pretty low profile. He's not really putting himself out there the way a lot of other guys with less of an impressive record than he has do. But I think what's interesting to Paige's point about when the putting is on versus when it's off, maybe this is the new way that the careers go on the PGA Tour, is that you just need to get hot once in a while with your weakness, or play around your weakness once in a while, and that's enough to get you on the winner's podium, that you don't need to be excelling in every statistical category week in, week out, because that's a really high standard to try to maintain.
How about that, Paige? Your thoughts on the modern PGA Tour? Is it, you know, Morikawa gets hot, he wins. You know, we see a player like a Victor Hovland get hot with the putter, and he wins. Is this a ball-striking error in the game?
Certainly, and I think the gap is really the data and the knowledge. It's hard to compare the generations because we just have so much more information now. The way that the data is gathered, these strokes gained categories haven't been readily available over the course of generations, so it's hard to necessarily compare. But I certainly think that's what we've seen, is that when the best ball strikers in the world have great putting weeks, they tend to convert the wins. So I think that's fair to say.
Well, someone who's put it all together quite a bit over the last season plus is my player, who's a perfect 10 this season, and that's going to be Patrick Cantlay. You say, well, yeah, UCLA, but let's look at the numbers, especially what he's done in his last 6 starts on the PGA Tour. I'm going to take it back to the end of last season. You remember that win at the BMW, win at the Tour Championship. Look at this, 22 of the last 24 rounds in the 60s. 24 of the last 24 rounds at par or better. You see the 6 top 10s, a couple of wins. I know those were last season, but he's continued that trend of top 10s. 113 under in his last 6 starts on the PGA Tour. I mean, to me, this is someone who has continued to find himself in contention. And we hear players like John Rahm talk about the importance of top 10s. To me, not all top 10s are created equal, but Patrick Cantlay's top 10s so far in 22 have been in the maw of contention.
I'm calling you out on this.
Uh-oh.
We said we were going to discuss who deserves a top 10 this season. You're going back into last season.
What are the stats? I need the stats to help my argument here.
I get the appeal in throwing up his, his FedEx Cup win and his $15 million payoff, but that was last season.
That's fair.
There is a recency bias in this game, and what have you done for me lately? I will say with Cantlay, he is the only guy out there right now who is putting himself right in the mix on Sunday afternoon every single week. And to our earlier discussion, it seems to come down to how well he puts on a given day. He putted pretty well Thursday, Friday in Phoenix, and then it kind of flatlined after that. The BMW that he outdueled Bryson in last summer, that might have been one of the best putting performances I'd ever seen from anyone on the PGA Tour. But Cantlay, is a candidate, but Cantlay doesn't have the W beside his name so far this season in the four starts. He took a long time off after the FedEx Cup, didn't show up until he got to Hawaii. And he doesn't have the win, so I'm not giving you those two wins from last season, Damon. Definitely not. That doesn't count.
That's fine, but he did have the greatest putting performance ever in the strokes gained putting era, but that was last year.
Season.
All right. We'll see what he does this week, maybe, as a hometown favorite, of course, at Riviera. Now, someone who's not in the field this week, but he continues to find his way into the headlines, the world number 12, Bryson DeChambeau, back in the news on its Sunday podcast. No laying up, said that DeChambeau, who has been linked to the Saudi-backed Super Golf League, has told other players that he doesn't intend to play any more PGA Tour events. So Bryson, of course, as these kids do these days, goes on social media. I'm very disappointed to miss Genesis Invitational this week at one of my favorite golf courses on tour. I am currently in the process of rehabbing a hip and hand injury, which I am making positive progress on day by day. He then went on to say there are many false reports going around by the media that are completely inaccurate. Any news regarding my health or playing schedule will come directly from me and my team only. This is just another inaccurate report. I look forward to getting healthy and seeing everyone soon. Bryson not in the field, but continues to make news about his future in the game and also his injury status.
Isn't this really the Bryson habit here of the tendency to make news week in, week out, regardless of what's actually happening inside the ropes? And he's not even inside the ropes this week. And I'm always skeptical when an athlete denies a report. Tom Brady denied reports that he was retiring 2 days before Tom Brady retired. And no laying up did not suggest that Bryson was not in the field this week because he was no longer playing the PGA Tour, that he was heading off for a money grab elsewhere. It's Bryson who's muddied the waters between those two things. And the guys on that podcast had laid out quite clearly the, A, their doubts about the veracity of whether or not he was actually going to leave the PGA Tour or was even telling people that, and allowed for the possibility that injury could keep him out there. And his Bryson texted a Golf Week colleague yesterday and said that he intends to play at the Arnold Palmer Invitational and defend his title 2 weeks down the road. And his agent said the same thing, that injury permitting, he will be there. So, you know, there's this idea that the media has somehow aligned against him with these false reports. It's nonsense.
Yeah.
But it's out there to muddy the waters and try to distract attention from the other conversations around money grabs and future plans.
Well, he's currently in the field to play the API and the Players. He, of course, won the Arnold Palmer Invitational, was in the mix all the way to Sunday at the Players Championship. But what a year that it has been. I mean, this was the high watermark. This was Bryson Mania at its fullest, at its best. You know, he told us he was going to try to take on this green, didn't hit the green, but ended up taking a shot at the green that nobody else on the field could do and pulling it off and being a fan favorite and kind of falling in love with the gallery and the gallery falling in love with him. And since then, it's been injury and innuendo and this back and forth with Brooks Koepka. It just seems like this turbulence just follows him, some by his own doing, and some by just the way the energy seems to move around him.
I would argue it's all by his own doing.
Okay.
You know, he picks feuds with the media. He gets into these gimmicks of going into the long drive contest, which was great entertainment, but you question whether or not an athlete at the top of his game ought to be going into these little cul-de-sacs like the long drive contest. And Bryson has consistently drawn so much attention, so much energy, and so much fire and criticism week in and week out, that it's got to be exhausting to try to focus on the business at hand. And I think that contributes to the fact that Bryson has not won since the API last year. And at a certain point, you have to learn how to take a break from that, put it all to the side. Bryson does not seem able to do that at all.
Paige, I tell you what, I see a player at the height of his power who is alluring, is fun to watch, is good for the game, taking on the par 5-6 at Arnold Palmer Invitational. But I also see someone who at times has shown a lack of maturity that we see across sports sometimes with young players who find themselves in the spotlight. I'm curious what you see.
What I see is a spectacle. And I see so often in sport, spectacles are rewarded. And it's rewarded with attention. It's rewarded with endorsements. And I think that's what we've seen. And what happens, though, is with that comes a bigger magnifying glass. And he's been roasted on that. And I agree. A lot of it is his own doing. If it's misspeaking about drivers that aren't working properly in a press conference that come from a moment of anger, you can call that immaturity. But I think all of it is because he has created an incredible ecosystem around him and what he has done physically, what he has done to create the excitement and enjoyment of watching him hit crazy long drives, whether that's entering a long drive contest or not. I mean, I don't hate the spectacle because I feel like there's a person that has been able to capture and monetize his own brand. The problem is he hasn't been able to avoid some of the controversy that has also come about because of the greater microscope.
And I think he's also contributing to this current narrative and confusion himself because he withdrew from the Sony Open with an injury. He showed up at the Farmers and appeared to be playing injured, missed the cut there, then managed to fly to the Middle East and pick up a sack full of cash while withdrawing there, and then comes back here where he claims to be injured again, yet his wrist was not so injured that he couldn't send a post in support of Charlie Hoffman's nonsense the other day as well. So he doesn't ever seem to have peripheral vision. He contributes a lot to the narrative around him and then blames a media narrative creating it.
Yeah, I don't know how an athlete can continue to thrive in that environment of turbulence. We'll see if he comes back to the PGA Tour next month as he is in the field at the API and the Players. Well, Scottie Scheffler, the most recent winner on the PGA Tour. Guess what? He's going to join the show, talk about that playoff tension at TPC Scottsdale, taking down Patrick Cantlay. Scotty joins us in just a little bit. He's a four-time major champ, getting his work in on Tuesday at Riviera's. Had some frustrating moments in the last couple of months in the Middle East, hoping for a little bit better inside the ropes in Los Angeles.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And WinGrips, the best grips in golf. And Bushnell Golf and the Pro XC, experience the best. And by Liberty Mutual Insurance, only pay for what you need.
On Golf Today, live look at the world number five, Rory McIlroy, out at the drivable par 4 10th hole. This morning at Riviera, interesting folks, he's gone for that green 17 times out of the 18 times he's played it, 2 under total in that time. You know, back in 2020, he talked about his philosophy on playing the famed 10th.
I mean, look, this is possibly the best drivable par 4 in the world here at Riviera, the 10th. It's just so, you know, it's just as easy to make a 6 as it is to make a 3. But all the statistics suggest that if you do go for the green, you're going to play the whole 0.3 of a shot lower than you would if you lay up. So, you know, all the statistics suggest that it's a hole to go for.
In many people's minds, the crown jewel of George Thomas's design, 315 yards, par 4. See that set of middle bunkers in play, 209 yard carry, something the members have to think about. See that left bunker, that's 271 yard carry. That's not much for the pros to think about these days. The green is really accessible from that left side only. Tiger saying of the drivable par 4, 10th, I've done both. I've gone for it and laid up, and I've been very unsuccessful both ways. It's a toss-up. It really is. It's a hole that the players have to think about, and we're seeing that more and more, Eamon, players are going for the green. You know, it's not one that we see them lay up on. You know, we used to see, you know, John Merrick won back in 2013. He laid up every day and beat Charlie Belgian in the playoff. But you see the percentage of players going for the green in one continues to grow.
Yeah, I think this course and this hole in particular, to me, it becomes this argument over nomenclature. I agree most players are being aggressive. I dispute the idea that most players are going for it because hitting a driver or a fairway wood and aiming 10, 15 yards left of the green is just a layup and then a chip shot after it. It's not going for the green. There's a tiny sliver on the front left portion of that green that is reachable. The rest of it, because it pitches with a pretty decent severity from front to back, with a bunker in front and a bunker on the back, it's almost impossible to hold that green with any kind of attacking approach shot other than that front left sliver. So guys aren't going for it. They're playing the hole aggressively in terms of busting it up there so they can just chip in from the left side and let the slope work to their advantage. But I dispute the very idea that they're actually attacking it.
Well, it's funny. Back in the 1920s, there was no front bunker. That is a more recent addition. And this is a hole. It's interesting. I read the fried egg blog by Andy Johnson back in 2018. He talked about the fact that it's now become very predictable on how the hole is played. You'd like to see a little more variety, but as that number continues to increase of players going for the green, you're not seeing them hold the green, A, and you're not seeing them lay up. So you're not seeing a lot of variety on this par four. Back in the day, you saw more thought going into how you play it.
I think we're going to see four short par fours on tour this year that actually have more variety in terms of how they're played than Riviera. We saw one last week. I would argue the 17th at TPC Scottsdale is a better short par four in terms of at least being drivable because, you know, you've got the water hazard on the left, but you have enough pin positions to actually influence your decisions. But you take the 3rd at Augusta National, the 12th at the Old Course, even the 12th at Sawgrass. There's, with Scottsdale in there as well, that's four short par fours that I think have more variety in how they are attacked.
And the green's getting smaller and smaller as folks hit sand shots that come out of that green. Paige, what do you see on this hole? Because for years, people have just kind of assumed this is the best drivable par four in the game.
And maybe it was. And I think that speaks to that first graphic that we saw. The historical average of players going for this green was 58%. But now you're seeing up in the last several years, over 70, 75% of the players going for it. So it has changed in how the players are playing. And I think Rory dialed it right in. I think the introduction of data analytics has changed the game, and it is changing the way that players are approaching it. I think it was very interesting that you said it was 0.3 shots different, and he is correct in saying that, specifically if you hit it left of the green. And you can see the data from last year. If you look at where the balls were placed and how they were rewarded, almost everybody is shooting for that left side of the green. It gives you an average score of 0.77 for those players that were going, 3.77 scoring average for those players that missed the green left versus players that laid up, which was actually over par. So you can tell why and how the players are doing it because they now have the numbers that back it up. They're not guessing anymore. And I think that's why you're seeing players play more aggressively. Perhaps distance has played a part in it. More players are hitting shorter clubs into that. But at the same time, I think it has everything to do with the math.
Yeah, that's all available to the players. The best in the world, Dustin Johnson, 2017 champ, said he also just aims to the left of that green and tries to make two or three from there. Much more to do coming up on Golf Today. The last winner on the PGA Tour, Texas Longhorn, Scottie Scheffler. Not Scottie Pippen, not running the triangle here. Talking PGA Tour winners next on Golf Today. Time to flash back on Golf Today. 2018 Collegiate Showcase as a then University of Texas senior Scottie Scheffler shot a 3-under par 68 at Riviera to earn an exemption into the 144-player field. The start of the Genesis Invitational would mark Scheffler's 5th PGA Tour start. So on Sunday, Scottie became the first Collegiate Showcase champ to win on the PGA Tour as he took home the title at the WM Phoenix Open. Genesis Invitational, posting this on Twitter, that call, how it started, how it's going thing. Back in the 2018 Showcase, Scheffler played alongside another Longhorn, Jordan Spieth, who at the time was asked to assess Scheffler's game.
Today he played just fantastic. I think he shot 3 under. He shot 3 under on the back nine here at Riviera in the wind. He played holes 12 through 16 there, straight into the breeze, 2 under, which is just, you know, when we go through there during the tournament, we're just praying that we get through there an even par. So he played a well-deserved round of golf for this exemption, is what it looks like he's going to get, and it was fun to watch.
And he hasn't stopped. Last weekend, Scheffler in Phoenix, 62-67 on the weekend. Got him into a playoff against Patrick Cantlay, third playoff hole from 25 feet, 7 inches. Rolls in the birdie putt for his first ever PGA Tour win for the 25-year-old Texas Longhorn. And in his young career already, some very strong accolades. He's Korn Ferry Tour Player of the Year, was the PGA Tour Rookie of the Year, beat John Rahm 4-3 in singles in the Ryder Cup. Who saw that coming? Part of a 2-0-1 week for him, and of course, a winner on Sunday. So we welcome in the champ himself, Scottie Scheffler. Scottie, you had 17 top 10s before Sunday's win. All these folks on TV, these golf writers were saying he's going to win. He's the best without a win. How'd you deal with all that chatter?
You know, I didn't really pay too much attention to it. The only time I ever really thought about it was when I would get questions asked about that in the interview room. And it didn't really cross my mind too much when I'm out here playing. I've just been out here trying to compete and do my best. And outside of that, I don't really think too much.
Scotty, I'm curious what Ted Scott brought to your team last week, because this is a guy, since you started working with him at the RSM, he'd had a lot of experience on Sunday afternoons in contention in Phoenix. You know, Bubba had been second twice, he'd been third, he'd been fourth, he'd been fifth. Was there a moment along the way where Ted Scott had a word or a piece of advice that helped you get across that finish line?
I think throughout the week, you know, he kind of just keeps me pretty calm and relaxed out there. He keeps things loose, which is nice. He's able to make me laugh in certain situations where, you know, I'm pretty frustrated and I don't really want to laugh or smile or, you know, anything like that. And he just does a good job of keeping me in the right frame of mind just so we can keep grinding and keep trying to play some good golf.
Scotty, I've asked you this before. I'm going to ask you again. Your college coach, John Fields at Texas, told me last year you have the it factor. Halle Berry has the it factor. Michael Jordan, Tiger, Jordan Spieth. What is the it factor in your mind? How would you describe it?
You know, I'm not really sure. I'm glad Coach Fields thinks that I have it. And, you know, maybe I do have a little bit of it. But I feel like I've done a decent job of performing well in kind of bigger moments. And, you know, last week was obviously a pretty big moment for me. And so to be able to perform well under pressure and finish strong and to be able to win the tournament was definitely pretty special for, you know, my family and me.
I bet you didn't think you were going to come on this show, Scotty, and be compared to Halle Berry. But, you know, strange things happen around here.
Yeah, that was definitely not.
There's one statistic really stands out with you this year. There's throughout your career, which is still obviously now pretty young, but there's been a marked improvement in your putting statistics every year, particularly from last year to this year. What have you been working with, and is it with Rick Smith you've been working to get that improvement in that part of the game?
Yeah, I've been working a lot with, you know, the guys at Scotty Cameron to kind of help, you know, improve my stroke. And then Randy and I have been doing a ton of work at home in our off weeks. And I got a nice little practice putting set up in my living room also that my wife lets me have to practice a little bit there as well. And so I think it's just a lot of hard work paying off. I haven't really made any drastic changes to that, you know, aspect of my game. I've just been keep trying to improve a little bit at a time. And according to the statistics I have. And so, you know, maybe I have a little bit over time.
All right, Scotty, I left Phoenix on Friday afternoon with a tear in my eye, insistent that the scene was so good and so special and memorable that it needed to be replicated at some point during the year, maybe once or twice more. Would you like to see it again, maybe in the playoffs, or is TPC Scottsdale the only place that that scene should happen?
Yeah, I'm not really sure if it's the only place it should happen. I don't think it should be like that every week on tour. I think that would be pretty draining for all of us, but to have it a few times throughout the year is pretty special, and, you know, it's a lot of fun to be able to play in that environment, and so, you know, having it a few more times a year would be pretty cool.
All right, Scott, I want to leave you with this. We just had a chat about the reachable par 4, the 10th hole at Riviera, compared to the 17th at TPC Scottsdale. Which do you like better and why?
Well, if I was to play one of them each day, it'd probably be 17th at Scottsdale because it's a bit easier than this one. This one, you're kind of just trying to get it in play somewhere up there on the green on the left side to where if you do make a mistake, you can still somehow make a four. If you hit it anywhere at the pin or right of the pin, you can get in a really bad spot really quickly. And so this hole out here is pretty challenging. And, you know, there's a few different ways to play it. I have a way that I like to play it. And, you know, it's paid off sometimes, and I've gotten bit in the butt a few times by it as well.
Are you driver just all the time? You be aggressive, you know, no need to overthink it, just aim for that left side?
I've laid up on this hole once in my career, and it was at the USAM here in the playoff to get into match play, and I laid up, and I think I made triple. So I'm not laying up again. So for me, it's usually a three-wood or a driver out somewhere left of the green and then try and manufacture something around the green to where I can have a birdie look.
Well, Scotty, congratulations on the big win on Sunday. Hope we talk to you again down the road. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, y'all. Appreciate it.
All right, PGA Tour winner Scotty Scheffler from the University of Texas. So why not find another Longhorn to talk about, to spy on? Jordan Spieth, three-time major champ, smiling on this Tuesday, Eamon Lynch.
Everyone smiles on Tuesday at Riviera. It's usually only one guy smiling by Sunday at Riviera, though.
Yeah, he has a good record here, loves the golf course, won a national championship, the University of Texas. At Riviera, saw him in the frame for a long time at Pebble Beach. Some would say he kind of gave it away. Some might say, you know what, Tom Hoge took it from him by just hitting some stronger shots down the stretch. He has said, has Jordan Spieth, that he's not all the way where he wants to be, that the process continues, but the process sure looks awfully good.
Yeah, he's a lot closer now than he was even, you know, 12, 13, 14 months ago. I mean, it was that 61 Saturday in Phoenix last year that kind of announced his return to the upper echelon of the game, because he'd been kind of lost for 2-3 years at that point. He's played consistently well since then, has really put himself in the mix, particularly in the Open Championship. He finished second to Morikawa at Royal St. George's. And, you know, he had his chance to win again last week in Pebble Beach. That bunker shot on 17 and the relatively short missed putt after it. I mean, it wasn't a Doug Sanders short putt, but it was makeable. You would have expected Jordan Spieth to save par there on 17, but again, Tom Hoge hit more quality shots down the stretch over the last three or four holes than Jordan did.
Yeah, he's up to 14th in the world. It wasn't that long ago where he was deep into the 70s, 80s, all the way to 92nd in 2021. Do you have a sense that he is going to be someone who's going to be a little inconsistent from time to time, miss the cut at the Farmers, T60 at Phoenix, or does he have that gear to get back to where he was in 2015, where he was the number one player in the world and was a dominant one at that? Or are there too many players like Rahm, like Cantlay, like Morikawa, and is his ball striking specifically off the tee just too erratic to be the player that he once was?
I think he was erratic even when he was number one in the world, even within tournaments that he won. I mean, people tend to forget what he did on the 71st hole at Chambers Bay because they focus on DJ missing the putt that would have forced a playoff on the very next hole. And he won the Open Championship at Royal Birkdale in 2017 from the driving range. So he's always had the ability to win ugly when things are going a little bit sideways. And I think that's a gift that a lot of guys out here don't have. I would put Rory in that category, that when things are going sideways, it's difficult for a guy like Rory to kind of find that little bit of grind that Jordan Spieth has in him here. And, you know, that's why you can't ever actually write him off at any point in a tournament, just because of that tenacity and that chip on his shoulder where he's almost expecting the lousy shot here or there. And he's got a great ability to erase it from memory and to carry on and just focus on the next target. And that's a real gift at this level of the game that a lot of guys don't, particularly guys who are very much into the mechanics of their swing, because they start to get caught up in their own internal wiring and wondering what just went wrong.
I think Jordan, for a time, was going down that rabbit hole. He would take a golf swing and look at his swing on the camera. I think he's trying to get back to being more of that feel player. And you're right, with tenacity, and I would say part and parcel is imagination, that he has a mind that looks at golf in a different way, especially the closer he gets to the green. It seems to be why his gifts are really, really emphasized at a place like Augusta National or a place like the Open Championship, where those skill sets and being able to manufacture shots and think of shots when you're short-sighted or when you have to come up with some magic, he seems to have that in spades compared to some other of his peers.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me a lot of the early part of Tom Watson's career, where, you know, he took a couple of gut punches early, but he managed to build a heck of a career with eight major victories. And a guy like Jordan Spieth, he's sitting on three right now. He's going for the career Grand Slam when we get to the PGA Championship at Southern Hills later this year. And, you know, that's a pretty good position to be in when you're 27, 28 years old, like Jordan Spieth, whatever he is now. It's he's got a tremendous career. He's got the burden of being judged against the player he once was. And life gets a lot more complicated now. He's gotten married. He has a kid. He's got business interests. So it's not necessarily easily sustained.
Yeah, I tell you what, strong chin, one of the strongest in the game. World number 14, gearing up on a Tuesday, and we're back after this. Getting you set for another big week in the game, PGA Tour at Riviera Country Club in Los Angeles for the Genesis Invitational. First round coverage, 4 p.m. on Thursday. Golf Today continues right now.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Welcome inside our studio, Damon Hack, Eamon Lynch. We got Paige McKenzie with us as well. You know, we just spoke to Scottie Scheffler a few minutes ago, a reminder of how deep and talented the play is at the highest level of golf and how hard it is to kind of say that one player, as great as John Rahm is an actually dominant player in today's era.
Well, if John Rahm wins by 10 strokes this weekend, then we can actually say he is. And that's the great thing about this tournament on this golf course is we have the top 10 players in the world. That's the first time that's happened in 6 months where we have them all in the same field. They are now going to be judged and measured performance-wise against their peer groups this week.
Interesting to me that Scottie Scheffler said he heard a little bit of the chatter about him having all those top 10, 17 top 10s before his first win. Paige, your thoughts. What did you hear from Scottie Scheffler? Maybe what did you see from him last week that impressed you the most?
What I heard from him today is it doesn't seem as though he pays as much attention as everybody else does to his performance. He's very focused on what his tasks are required in playing week in and week out and not so much worried about the rest of what people are talking about. What impressed me the most was just closing. And I think there are moments where you thought maybe Scottie Scheffler would have crossed the finish line earlier, but when he got the opportunity coming down the stretch in Scottsdale, he was able to birdie, four of the last five, obviously missing that last putt in regulation. That may haunt him for a second, but getting it done in the playoff. Again, that field was incredibly strong as well, so it has to feel good to know that you're beating the elite of the elite that was in that Waste Management or the WM Phoenix Open.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on this, the maturity level of this player to miss a short putt? And it was interesting that you had the question about the caddy and Ted Scott, who's got Bubba Watson for so many years, and how he's able to put that behind him so quickly.
He has to have learned patience in what is already the infancy of his career. This is only his real third season on the PGA Tour, but he's a guy who was on an upward trajectory. And in a past era, Scottie Scheffler's trajectory would be getting talked about a lot more. When he turned professional towards the end of 2018, he was 1,589 in the world rankings. By the end of the next year, he was 66. By the end of the next year, he was 31st. By the end of last year, he was 12. Now he's number 9. But in the era of Colin Morikawa and a Victor Hovland, suddenly that doesn't look as impressive, especially if you're not hoisting a lot of trophies. So I think what Scottie Scheffler has shown over the last few years is this kind of patience to learn his craft, to learn his way around the tour so that the venues aren't unfamiliar to him every year when he gets there. And, you know, he's put himself in the mix a lot. He didn't take a lot of gut punches along the way. He was in contention, but it's not as though he kind of coughed up any tournaments along the way with any kind of frequency that other players have done and then struggled to get over that speed bump later. He's shown tremendous patience. And now, with this burden off of him, I think it's going to be really interesting to see when he's kind of freed up with this, without this kind of expectation on him anymore.
You know, I asked Scotty about that it factor comment that his college coach John Fields said he had. I'll tell you what I think it means. It's someone who is kind of impervious to the outside expectations, who is a self-motivated player, who has his own appointments that he believes he has to tick off at some point. This is someone who followed in the footsteps of Jordan Spieth. That's one thing John Fields said. He said, you know, this is a player who almost did everything that Jordan Spieth did in high school and had to follow in these outside expectations, but had the tough exterior to be able to kind of block all of that out, to block out the noise, to play through some injury, to find his own way at Texas, and to finally become a PGA Tour winner. I'm very much, he shot 59 before. He beat John Rahm in singles when John Rahm looked invulnerable at the Ryder Cup at Kola.
And if this guy was any more laid back, he'd be horizontal. And there's a reason, I think, why he was paired with the people he was paired with in the Ryder Cup, with guys like Bryson. He's one of those guys that you could literally put in any kind of team situation who's going to get along with anyone and hold up his end of the bargain. And when you were Steve Stricker last year and you had a team that was perceived as being divided, then a guy like Scottie Scheffler, who's not going to overshadow any of the big stars on the team by reputation, nor is he going to irritate them by personality, then he becomes a really valuable asset out there. And he's got a very solid team around him. He shares an agent, Blake Smith, with Brooks Koepka. Blake Smith's father is the only teacher he's had and the only teacher he works with. And now he's got an extremely experienced caddy on his bag. He started working with Ted Scott at the RSM, and I believe this is, what, their fourth, fifth start?
Yeah.
And they have a win. So if he has and keeps this solid team around him without disruption, if he doesn't go searching for anything, then it could really be a standout year for Scottie Scheffler.
Another guy who had a great week in Kohler, Dustin Johnson, who could also be described as so laid back that he would be horizontal as well. World number six now. Won the Genesis Invitational back in 2017. Was also a runner-up there in 2015, 2014 as well. Tied for third back in 2010. Fantastic record. Second all-time career earnings at the Genesis, 10 top 10 finishes in 14 tries, all those number one rankings, top 10, score to par, strokes gained tee to green, strokes gained approach as well. So why don't we take a look at the outright odds this week, powered by our good friends at PointsBet Sportsbook. And DJ right there, not too far behind. John Rahm. Rahm has become kind of the guy every week to chase. Patrick Cantlay coming off that runner-up finish. Dustin Johnson plus 1,600. So time for a little buy or sell, a little DJ edition. So, Eamon, I'm going to start with you. Should Dustin Johnson be the favorite every time he tees it up at Riviera, considering his fantastic record?
No, well, if that logic applied, then Jack would still be the favorite every year at Augusta National for the Masters.
Oh,
you know, past performance is no guarantee of future results, and particularly in the case of DJ of late, because DJ has not won outside of the Middle East in a year and a half since that 2020 Masters win. And there's been a distinct erosion. It's not a huge erosion, but there's a distinct erosion in certain critical performance categories with DJ that just make me start to think that the spark isn't there right now. He's played here 13, 14 times, has 10 top 10 finishes, so he's clearly comfortable on the golf course, and his ball striking was actually better at Torrey Pines than his result was. He finished, I think, T25, but he was top 6 or 7 in the major ball striking categories. So part of it is there, but the putting is not there, and I think this is a golf course where the putting is going to matter.
Yeah, and I wonder if, you know, in this era of young, maybe hungrier players, DJ now has two major championships, a U.S. Open and a Masters. We saw tears from him, something we've never really seen when he donned that green jacket. You know, growing family at this point, 37 years of age. You've got these younger, hungrier players out there like John Rahm, like Scottie Scheffler, like Patrick Cantlay. Your thoughts, are you buying or selling? I'm selling this, that DJ should be the favorite every time he tees it up at Riviera.
I am selling it as well. I think you have to look at hot hands as well. And there are other players that have also played Riviera well as of late. John Rahm in his last three starts here have finished in the top 17 each and every time. Xander Schauffele, another name that's currently playing well in good form, has also played well. So I don't want to say that he should be the favorite every time. However, if you're in a one-and-done league and you're looking for a player that is likely to play well here, this is one of the courses that Dustin Johnson does have success at. when you have success in notable certain golf courses, and this is for Dustin Johnson, some of his biggest earning golf courses that he's played at, this is incredible. He's made over $4.4 million here at Riviera. Augusta National, you see, over $4 million as well. Pebble Beach also includes the two U.S. Open starts, which put him at the highest earning golf course that he's ever, or that he plays at on the PGA Tour. So certainly, if it's a one and done and you're thinking, where should I use DJ? This is a great opportunity here at Riviera because he plays this golf course so well. But I wouldn't say each and every time that he would be the favorite.
What do you think?
Who says there's no guaranteed money on the PGA Tour? Look at those numbers right there. The guy shows up and he catches a big check.
Hey, Paige is playing the straight cash homie, Randy Moss quote from back in the day. All right, let's have another question, buy or sell. How about top three official world golf ranking? He's sixth now. DJ will finish the year in the top three somewhere on the strength of great play, including Riviera this week.
I don't see it happening. I think, you know, DJ's as low in the rankings now as he's been since the PGA Tour returned after the pandemic in the summer of 2020. And it seems as though the slide, it's not just the fact that he's sliding and the results haven't been there with the lack of a win. It's who he needs to leapfrog to get there. And it's pretty crowded at the top of the world rankings right now with guys like Rahm and Morikawa and Hovland and Cantlay. That's some pretty stout competition, all of whom are playing well right now, yeah. And DJ isn't. So it's kind of hard to see, without some radical turnaround in his game, it's hard to see DJ being in that top three by the end of the year.
The consistency of Rahm, consistency of Cantlay, consistency of Victor Hovland with three wins in his last six starts around the world. I'm selling this as well, and I'm an optimistic guy, Paige, as you know, but I'm selling this. Are you buying or selling that DJ will end in the top three at the end of the year?
I'm selling, and I'm actually laughing because I wrote down Victor, Cantlay, Rahm on my notepad as I'm listening because I was thinking the exact same thing. When you have players that are trending, it's hard to see somebody that's not necessarily trending overtaking them. Now, we've seen Dustin Johnson go on incredible runs. We've seen him go on a late season runs. So I'm not ruling it out completely, but we need to see maybe a little bit more form in the buildup over the next couple of months to make me think that by season's end, he'll be in the top three in the world.
All right, what about big picture future? We're seeing Phil Mickelson play so well. Late 40s, early 50s. Dustin Johnson, buy or sell that his best golf could be ahead of him?
No, and I would argue that because his golf that is behind him was so outstanding that it's very hard to imagine that he can improve in that. If you look at that window between DJ's two majors, the 2016 US Open and the 2020 Masters, he won 15 PGA Tour events. Nobody was getting anywhere close to DJ in that stretch. But he's won nothing since. He turns 38 this summer, which is still pretty young. He's got a long career ahead of him. But he's also getting married this year. He has kids. Life gets a little more complicated. You start to wonder, you know, he's always drifted in and out in certain windows in his career. And you start to wonder if the drive is there as much as it is. I don't think he's lost any of the drive. But, you know, there are distractions in DJ's life all the time. And it's hard for me to believe that, given how good the past was, that it could be better in the future.
No wins in his last 20 starts, and his play in winning that U.S. Open was so spectacular. The start of 2017, when he won three starts in a row, that DJ was a dominant DJ. How about you, Paige? Any sliver of hope that in some form or fashion, DJ's best golf could be ahead of him?
I don't think so. I mean, you might get the occasional pop-up where you can say this week is sparkling and you can compare it to the height of what DJ has already performed in his career. But I agree with both of you. And I remember sitting in Orlando just down the hall from where you guys are and saying that DJ is the best player of the decade just a couple of years ago. So I have high memories, I guess, of what DJ has accomplished. So I would give him credit for all of that and say that that is a very, very high bar to try to raise or pass once again.
Wow. Hey, have a great week in the next few years, DJ. Not a lot of love for DJ's potential over the next few years.
Well, this is a problem of being judged by the player you've been. And DJ is riding a streak now of 14 consecutive seasons with a win on the PGA Tour. The all-time record is shared by Arnie and Jack. They both had 17. So DJ, I think, I would expect him to continue that streak. I expect DJ to keep winning. I just don't think he's going to win at the clip that he was winning at.
Hard standard to continue to hold. with a man from South Carolina. All right, from the Palmetto State to the Golden State, we've got a California kid in the field this week, still challenging that number one spot. Look at that Dodger fan, Colin Morikawa Young. Colin, ready to play second base for the Blue Crew, perhaps. 25 years of age now, born in L.A., graduated from La Cañada High, La Cañada, Flint Ridge, California. Went to UC Berkeley, played on the Palmer Cup. I mean, standout, won five times, including the 2019 Pac-12 championship, and has had great success in the state of California. As you know, won his first major championship at TPC Harding Park, went 4-0-0 in the Walker Cup at LA Country Club. Two of his five college wins came in California, including an 11-shot win, tied for fourth in 2021 to U.S. Open at Torrey Pines, as Colin Morikawa meets the press.
Yeah, it's always nice to be home. Saw my parents, hung out with them. It's always comfortable to, you know, go back to somewhere you just know everything. And even though, you know, I grew up about 30, 40 minutes away, it's just very comfortable. I mean, it's the same thing as when I was, you know, back in San Francisco and spent 4 years out up there for school. And it's just, it's a good feeling. You know, I have all my food spots out here. I've got my favorite restaurant out here. So obviously, you know, I've played RIV quite a few times now. We had the USAM here, I think in 2017, played all right. Obviously I've played a couple times out here for the Genesis, and, it's all a learning experience. This course is one of my favorites out on tour. I think it's a lot of guys. But overall, you know, I'm just glad to be back out here on the PGA Tour and ready to play.
And you just mentioned it, back on tour. You're making your first start since Century, fourth start overall in the season. Just kind of talk about where you're at and the state of your game as we really kind of get some momentum going this season.
Yeah, it was nice to have a break through the winter. I actually ended up getting COVID over winter, and that was a fun time, just sitting in a room. But, you know, that's what happens. And, you know, I ended up taking a longer break than expected, got a lot of rest, played 2 weeks in Dubai over there on the DP World Tour, and, you know, just didn't have it. Game wasn't feeling great, body wasn't feeling great, and sometimes that happens, and I needed a full reset. Coach came out last week, figured some things out, and like now I'm feeling great. So the confidence is back. I'm glad to be back in LA, and I'm just excited to see everyone and ready to play some great golf.
Colin Morikawa, happy to be back in his native Los Angeles. You know, we talked about Bryson DeChambeau in the first hour and kind of the tempestuous nature of his life on the PGA Tour. Now we see Colin Morikawa, I see equanimity. I see someone who has kind of kept things to, you know, any distractions to a minimum, someone who focuses on the golf course, someone whose iron play is so superior, and someone who just seems to kind of ride the ebbs and flows of golf with remarkable aplomb.
There are rivers of cold sweat running from the locker room at Riviera right now down that hill when they hear Colin Morikawa saying that he's confident, he's feeling good, and the confidence is back. Mm. Because when this guy is confident and he's on, he's kind of like Johnny Miller back in the 70s, where he had to lean sideways to see the flag. And on a golf course like this, where the greens are the toughest on tour to hit all year, and he is by far, by a significant margin, the best iron player in the game right now. And he's sitting here telling us on Tuesday that he's feeling confident. That's where the points bet guys want to get in on that one.
Yeah, his ability to diagnose a golf course early in his career has been one of the great strengths, along with his iron play, his ability to be at a new venue. You know, for example, the Open Championship, yeah, where he wins in his first ever start in that great major championship. This golf course, I've been surprised his best finish, T26, in just two starts. I've been surprised at that, but I imagine that will change this week. Big picture for him going forward, is his play one of the reasons why you don't think Dustin Johnson will crack that top three? Because of his consistency, because of the incredible consistency of his iron play and how superior it is to his peers, for example.
Yeah, and there are other players like Colin Morikawa who are going to be jammed in at the top of that world rankings for the next few years, barring injury or catastrophe of some kind, because you see a guy like John Rahm, who's there every time he tees it up. You see Patrick Cantlay, even when he's not winning, seems to finish top four, top five, top six every week. Morikawa is there all the time when he puts it out there. Victor Hovland is there. Mm. Rory McIlroy seems to come in and out, but seems to have a chip on his shoulder again after a couple of disappointments lately. There's a lot of guys in there. Scottie Scheffler is below DJ in the world rankings right now. But these are guys who are all on an upward trajectory, whereas DJ his trajectory is either stalled or starting to slip downward. It would be an awfully ambitious call to say that DJ is going to find his way into that top three. He certainly has all the talent and all the tools for it, but there's a lot of competition.
Yeah, Colin represents this younger generation with remarkable grace. He has the temperament and he has the game to go with it as well. Well, Colin McCall grew up watching who? Tiger Woods, still to come. This marks a very special anniversary when Tiger made his debut at Riviera. We look back 30 years and look ahead to what's next for Tiger.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And by the new Ping Glide Forged Pro Wedges. Get fit today.
Got a text from a buddy this morning at Riviera, said simply, man, Riv is incredible. It is, has a great major championship history as well. 1948 U.S. Open won by Ben Hogan, the 83 PGA won by Hal Sutton himself, 1995 PGA won by Steve Elkington, and yes, the U.S. Women's Open will be at Riviera Country Club in 2026. You see Pine Needles, Pebble, Lancaster, and Erin Hills as well. We're going to welcome in Paige McKenzie once again. I think about the future of the U.S. Women's Open and the sites that it's going to. When you think about a U.S. Women's Open at Riviera, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
History. The fact that the women and the Women's U.S. Open can be part of the history at Riviera Country Club. I think for every player that tees it up, there is a prestige that goes on with not only the event, but with where it is. And anybody that wins at a Pebble or at an Augusta or at any of the major venues in the United States, that's part of it. That's part of what goes with that championship. And when you have a golf course like Riviera, which has been in the spotlight for so many years, has so much history behind it, has so much cachet in the game, it elevates. It elevates the winner. It elevates the event.
How about for you, Amy? Because I agree. I can still close my eyes and see Stacey Lewis hitting a 5-iron into the road hole, to win her Open Championship there. I can remember a conversation I had with Michael Bamberger when we were colleagues at Sports Illustrated when Lorena Ochoa walked away from the game young and said, it's too bad she didn't really get to explore some of the great kind of, moments in the game. I said, you know what? She jumped into Poppy's Pond and she played the old course in long sleeves, that she played the big room. How important is it that the women have a chance to have a moment at Olympic Club, to be able to go to a place like Riviera and walk where Ben Hogan and Sam Snead and others walked?
I think it's crucial because you don't really have equality of performance or opportunity until you're performing on the same stages. And this game is all about stages. We have these iconic golf courses that have hosted men's major championships in some cases for a century or more.
Yeah.
And Muirfield is one this year that we're going to see the women on finally, and that's arguably the best golf course in all of Scotland. And I think what's really interesting with the way the women's major venues are going, it's great for architecture geeks because we're going to get to see these courses played with a much truer authenticity to the architecture.
I was going to say properly.
Intent.
See them played properly.
They're not going to be overpowered by distance hitters. There's going to be much more a case of strategy than just the brute force that is in the men's game right now. And I think that's particularly true at a place like Riviera. And if you move farther out on that graphic we saw of the venues for the U.S. Women's Open, we're going to see that at Oakmont. We're going to see that at Merion a decade down the road from now. And you'll certainly see it at the old course. You'll see it at Muirfield. And to me, that just becomes a much more interesting form of golf to watch when you see the courses played by the best players in the world with some architectural integrity left.
How about that, Paige? How might the women's skill set be emphasized at Riviera?
Yeah, for me, I think one of the determining factors, or the differences, I guess, between a lot of the LPGA and the PGA Tour is just how accurate the women are with the clubs at hand. They typically play a longer iron into the greens. And when you look at how Riviera has played on the PGA Tour, it is one of the most difficult golf courses to hit greens in regulation. It is, in fact, the most difficult of non-majors on the PGA Tour schedule. That's extraordinary. Only 54% of the greens on average are hit during this week. And I think when you look at how the women may play it differently, I actually feel like this suits the women's game quite well. They typically, at the very, very top end, hit a higher percentage of greens and are actually hitting a longer club into those greens. So I think it'll be interesting to see how it is different. And I like that aspect of seeing the same stage but played differently. And Riviera will, I think, be a perfect example of that and be able to really showcase the accuracy of which the women play the game.
I mean, the remarkable accuracy of a Jin Young Ko, for example. Can you kind of look ahead to seeing a duel with Nelly Korda and her strength and length off the tee with the accuracy of Jin Young Ko, two of the best players in the women's game who go about it very differently?
And when you have great actors like that, you need a great stage
to
put them on. And I think it's going to be remarkable to watch over the next few years when we see this elevation, because it brings in the elevation of venues. It brings in the familiarity, which is key here, because all golf fans know the holes on the old course. They know every hole on Augusta National. They know Pebble Beach. That automatically elevates major championships based on the familiarity of the venue. And golf fans see Riviera every year. Mm. And to me, that just adds, and it's got stature. Places like Evian, with all due respect, do not have that. Yeah. And I would argue that even Mission Hills, where the Dinosaur and now the Chevron was played for so long, didn't have the character, the architectural character or familiarity that Riviera has. And I think it will, in addition to the huge boost in the purse that they announced quite recently, it's going to elevate this championship to the premier one in the women's game.
I think you're right. And part of the heartbreak for the American golf fan with Lexi Thompson nearly winning that U.S. Women's Open was because of the stage at Olympic Club in San Francisco. Well, folks, much more to do on this Tuesday. Kira K. Dixon's going to join us, going to dig into the Collegiate Showcase at Riviera with an exemption into the Genesis on the line. Some notable winners through the years, including Will Zalatoris to hit the gala and Scottie Scheffler.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Back on golf today, Ethan Mangum of the College of William & Mary teed it up in Monday's Collegiate Showcase. He was named the inaugural Pathway Player into the tournament's collegiate event. Pathway Player Invitation is intended to provide exposure and opportunity to high-level competition in support of the recipient's professional golf aspirations. In conjunction with this initiative, the tournament will support select causes focused on providing minority golfers with access and opportunity to the game. Let's check out his bio. Native of Jackson, Mississippi. Plays college golf at William & Mary. Previously played at Florida A&M and Drexel. Medalist in the 2021 MEAC Championship. Also helped lead Florida A&M to its first ever MEAC title. So let's hear from Ethan.
It's huge. It's huge for diversifying the sport even more. I know there's been a lot of initiatives to help grow the game lately, but being the inaugural Pathway Player, it really puts an emphasis onto my amateur career, and it's definitely a path to a professional career and potentially professional wins.
What was it like testing your game against one of the great venues on the PGA Tour?
It was a great opportunity. The course was in perfect shape. The weather was amazing. There wasn't a cloud in the sky all day. It was a little chilly this morning, but outside of that, I mean, it was just incredible.
Where can a day like this, I know maybe you didn't finish the way you would have liked, but where can a day like this, playing a course like this against a competition you played, how can that help you so much in your aspirations going forward into possibly like professional golf?
It definitely lets me know where I am. There's a couple swings that I didn't get away with today that I'll definitely be working on back at home. Around the greens would be the biggest thing for me to really work on, because I don't really see this type of grass around the greens. But that's the biggest thing. It's a stepping stone for me, because it shows me where I am right now, heading into the spring season. But it's also a great opportunity to really play against the top amateurs in the world. And so it was a lot of fun.
and just a great initiative to allow these players still in college an opportunity to compete for a spot.
Yeah, two putt par, finished the round at 5 under, able to get it done. And some names viewers might, you know, recognize: RJ Mankey, David Puge at 2 under 69. So let's hear from the champ.
I had a lot of fun, first of all, but I hit the ball pretty good off the tee, so I had a lot of great opportunities going into the green, and I took advantage of those pretty early. I was 5 under through 11 after a nice drive leading to a birdie on 10, and then a great second shot with a nice putt for an eagle on 11. So after that, it was great, and I was really trying to go a few deeper just to have the mentality, but I did get pretty nervous coming in on the back nine. Had a couple three putts, but was able to save it with a few good approaches.
What are you looking forward to the most playing in the Genesis Invitational?
Oh, I don't know. Probably playing with some other cool tour players. I'm excited for it all.
Is there one thing that you're looking to maybe take away from the week, or just the overall experience?
I think I'll hopefully learn something after the week. Right now, there's nothing in particular that I'm going to try to learn, just take it all in and enjoy the experience.
One of the cool aspects of this event, Brennan played alongside Wake Forest alum and 2015 champ Will Zalatoris, who is out getting some work in on Monday. So for more on Will, we say hello to our own Kira K. Dixon from Riviera. Great to see you, Kira.
Great to see you too, Damon. Now, you mentioned that Will Zalatoris was out there with his fellow Demon Deacon. He told us that it was a bit of a full circle moment for him. Now, on Michael Brennan's game, he said, and this is a big statement, Will said that he's one of the top 10 drivers of the golf ball in the world, and that he only missed 2 fairways all day, which is certainly saying something. He also spoke to how important this opportunity is. You guys have been mentioning it, and how much it helps develop these young players in their careers. Now, something that Will has had a lot of experience with lately is learning lessons. As we've talked about, he fell in the playoff to Luke List a few weeks ago at Torrey Pines, and then shortly after was tested positive for COVID. So he was not able to go on and tee it up at the AT&T Pro-Am. But that also allowed him some time to sit down and reflect. He rewatched the entire tournament, and he told us about those lessons learned.
I learned a lot in Torrey. You know, it was kind of frustrating, obviously, to be, you know, sitting on my tail and, you know, just basically after a week where I felt like I'd lost a golf tournament. But I think if anything, you know, I told Coach Hossis today that I think that week is honestly going to help me win more, and it's more motivating. You know, I kind of had to eat the humble pie and sit at home and, you know, watch the reruns and see the mistakes that I made, and I know where my head was at, and It only makes me better. And so I think, you know, really once I got out after COVID and was able to come back out and practice, you know, it was kind of a new appreciation, if you will, in a weird way, because it was just so frustrating to sit there, especially with how motivated I was to get back in contention at Pebble, and I couldn't do it. So, you know, come back to a golf course that I know really well. I've played a lot here. I'm excited. Even if my play isn't up to the highest level that it could be, I think if anything, I keep getting better and I keep understanding my golf game more, and I know the fixes. I know my habits, especially when I get under pressure. And, you know, I thought that I learned a lot that week. Especially I thought that I stayed patient the last day. You know, there weren't many birdie opportunities coming in with the exception of 18. And, you know, I thought I made the putt on 18, but, you know, at the same time, it is what it is. I mean, it's you know, every kid dreams of winning a tournament or the Masters or whatever event it is. And, you know, I was able to see my family on the backside of the green on 18. And, you know, I just said, all right, this is going to be our first one. And, but obviously it wasn't the time yet. But, you know, I've been playing some really good golf, and I know that obviously it's going to come soon.
Damon, moving forward, Will told us that he's really focusing on improving his game off the tee. That meant putting in a new, longer driver into the bag. He's also gained some weight, and all of that has translated into about 15 extra yards, which is a massive advantage out here and certainly makes a difference. And importantly for him, he really just wants to focus on staying out of that rough.
No doubt. Kira K. Dixon on the ground at Riviera. For the folks at home, Will Z, my one-and-done pick this week at the Genesis.